Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This year's Academy Awards are definitely not Oscars so white. That was the criticism that erupted in 2016 that only movies made by white men and telling their stories seemed to stand a chance. In contrast, this year's leading nominees span an array of backgrounds. One trend, for example, is movies featuring tough, leading female characters, many of a certain age. Another prominent theme among these films is persistent racism, including one that uniquely portrays it as a horror movie. But while the Oscars get all the attention around this time of year, many popular films never come close to that coveted Best Picture nomination, like Star Wars The Last Jedi or Wonder Woman. So today in The Exchange, we cover the best movies of 2017 with an eye to the Oscars and the other films that Americans just loved. Later in the hour, we look ahead to movies this year, and of course, let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And back with me in the studio are our two favorite movie folk, Amy Diaz, editor and movie reviewer for The Hippo. Amy, great to see you. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Tom Cook, professor of film at Keene State College. And Tom, thank you also.
Hi, Laura. Good to be here with both of you always.
Well, there's been so much buzz about the Oscars this year. 9 Best Picture nominations. That's a lot of movies and all sorts of other really interesting nominations. So for people, Amy, who are excited about the Oscars, who hear about it on NPR, they read about it in the newspaper, they hear about it in all sorts of places, it can be frustrating in New Hampshire. You don't have dozens of movie theaters like you might in New York or Boston or D.C. So before we even talk about the movies ourselves, I just want to say that our producer, Christina Phillips, put up on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, where you can see these movies in your New Hampshire theater or streaming. But Amy, to you first, you know, where can you see these great movies that we keep hearing about?
Well, luckily this year you can see almost everything all over the place. There are 9 movies nominated. 7 of them are still in theaters, and you can pretty much see those at theaters. If you're willing to go as far south as, say, Methuen and Tingsboro, you can see them in a theater. There are 2 movies that came out earlier in the year, Dunkirk and Get Out, and those are available. You can see those at home. The movies, the actor and actress, performing actor and actress, most of those are available in theaters in the area. And Netflix actually has a good number of movies as well this year. Mudbound, which is a movie that has some nominations, Mary J. Blige for Best Supporting Actress, also Cinematographer. That's on Netflix. A couple of the documentaries and foreign language films are on Netflix. So this year, I feel really lucky as a moviegoer. You can see a lot of the things, even if you don't want to drive all the way into Boston.
So in years past, has it been tougher as a movie reviewer based in New Hampshire to see some of these, especially the more sort of artsy, obscure ones?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I feel like I know that there was a Best Actress performance. I've never seen that movie. It was a foreign film that came out last year in 2016. I never got around to seeing that. It, you know, came here maybe in the summer. Foreign films especially can be tough. Those can get here really late. But this year, I think it's really nice that all those best pictures are available for us to see. In past years, there are some that just kind of either never make it here or make it here months later.
Yeah, and you hear the reviews, you hear people talking about it.
And
you think,
excited.
I really want to see that. And yes. You can't.
And you just have to write it down and remember when it comes available. available on streaming.
Well, and part of the idea, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong, is they don't want to put these things, you know, on Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever too early because they want to kind of keep people going to the movie theater.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really interested to see how that will change, especially with something like Mudbound. I don't know where it was in a theater. It was in a theater maybe so short. I don't think it ever came around here, but was available very quickly on Netflix. You know, as a moviegoer, I think that's great. So I wonder if just the fact that people will be able to see these will encourage them to be on streaming faster and you know, more available for people out here, not in New York and L.A.
And some cities in New Hampshire, like Concord and Keene, do have sort of alternative art houses, I guess you could call them, like Red River and the Colonial Keene. So, Tom, where do you go when you want to see Oscar movies?
Well, that's what you've both referred to, kind of the conundrum that I consider it if you're talking about Oscars, because the Oscar-worthy or the type of film that we kind of consider to be Oscar-worthy, the more serious ones, tend to come out toward the end of the year. And so Amy already referred to it. They're not out on video. You have to wait 2-3 months for them to become a streaming. So you do have to find these places. The Colonial does offer them. The Latches Theater in Brattleboro offers a lot of those. But otherwise, you're right. You have to come up to Red River. You have to go down to Boston. So if you're quote-unquote looking like a serious film goer and you're not just out to see stuff blowing up or aliens from space, you've got to search it out if you're living around here. One of the maybe the minor drawbacks if you're a big film fan.
So where do you go, Tom?
I'll go to the Colonial. The Latches Theater is a sponsor of my cable access show, and so we'll see that. But I spend a lot of time up at Hooksett for some of the smaller things at Cinemagic and also Red River.
Okay. So, and again, I want to let everybody know, nhpr.org/exchange. Christina
That's a great
put
service.
Together a chart, and there's some information on there. It's not complete. It changes all the time, but it's there. Speaking of Netflix, that was a Netflix original movie, Mudbound, that you mentioned,
yeah.
Amy. So I was kind of interested in that. I mean, how much are the Netflixes of the world getting involved in big Oscar-worthy movie productions?
Well, this is the first year that when I sort of went searching for what I hadn't seen that I found so many on Netflix that weren't just, you know, oh, it finally made it to Netflix because it came out this summer. So it seems like this is a, you know, a bigger year. Two documentaries, Icarus and Strong Island, are available on Netflix. A short subject is on Netflix. And I noticed that one of the foreign language film movies on Body and Soul are coming to Netflix early in February. So, you know, definitely this is a Netflix year. I think I saw a headline somewhere that said the Netflix year. So it, again, as a moviegoer, it's great that there is a way to see these smaller movies.
Well, and especially since, you know, you're a mom of young children, you can't
drive down to Boston to see a movie. Many days. So yeah, no, I love that that stuff is available, you know, right there for me.
Tom, I wanted to ask you a question, something you said. You said movies that we consider Oscar-worthy. You know, what makes a movie Oscar-worthy, especially for those big nominations like Best Picture, Best Actress? I mean, you know, few people outside Hollywood really care. Like, oh, that movie got Best Original Song. I can't wait to go see it.
I think that's an excellent notice because I usually, when I consider either what's Oscar-worthy for myself or what the, I break it up into that. What do I think is worthy of Best Picture, Best Performance, and then there's the Academy. And not to be negative, but I spent enough time in the industry to see with a lot of my friends, and a couple of my friends are up for Oscars this year, that it's just a little inclusive club.
Yeah, who are these people?
Yeah, and not to be negative, but I see the Oscars as being, hey, aren't we great? And not only the fact you mentioned that there are nine, and they increased the number of Best Picture nominees. It used to be just five, and now it's nine. And that's for dollars. Getting a nomination increases your box office by 20%. Getting the actual Oscar increases it by 30%. So not sure if I'm answering your question.
Well, so
but
what makes – it's a two – I
sure.
think what you're giving me is deserves a two-part question. So first of all, you know, who are these Academy Award people who make these decisions, and what do they consider Oscar worthy?
Right. Well, actually, my younger son Walter asked me a similar question last night. Relative to what becomes a nominee is the people in the individual categories. Cinematographers write down their five favorite cinematographic films and submit those to the Academy. And so the top five become the nominees for everybody else in the Academy to vote on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So people who actually work in that particular part of the film industry, they get first crack at it?
Right. So supposedly the people who really know what they're talking about, the sound designers are the ones who decide these are the best sound design films, and then the rest of the Academy gets to make their pick.
Okay.
And so hopefully we've got some kind of logical filtration going on.
But relating to that Oscars So White movement of 2015, 2016, Amy, I read last night that the Oscars are still overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly white, like by 75% or something.
Well, and, you know, so if actors vote for actors, if directors vote for directors, the way you get more diversity is to get more diversity in your pool of directors that are in the Academy, or more diversity in your pool of actors, which is, I think, what they did, what was it, like 2 or 3 years ago when kind of that movement started. And I think the result of that is Get Out and Lady Bird. And they're directing nominations for their respective directors because you are having different people voting and therefore interested in maybe different kinds of stories.
And if I could jump...
Yeah, go ahead.
Jump in real quickly. I've had a lot of people ask me similar questions on local radio where I do a review every week. People will call in and just lambaste Hollywood for putting out all of this. And my response is, well, if you don't like something or if you want to see more women, you do it by your dollar, because all Hollywood's interested in is the dollar. And so if you attend more of these films like Lady Bird or Get Out, Hollywood's going to get the notice and you're going to see more that kind of content.
So despite the fact, Tom, that the Academy is still overwhelmingly white and male,
yep,
there is a lot of talk this year about a huge increase in the number of minority characters, leading characters, and women directors, leading characters, and so forth.
Absolutely.
So that's changed.
Right. And I think that's a great way if I don't mean to be negative about Hollywood wanting the dollar, don't we all want to get rich and famous? But if you're wanting to expand your viewer base, make more movies for minorities, for women, for smaller subjects even. And I think more people are going to come to the theaters.
Well, this gets us into some of the nominations this year. So let's just dive into it. That's the fun part, really, talking about the movies themselves. And I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as well. With Oscar season upon us, we're looking at what movies were nominated, the themes they're covering. Also, again, if you want to know how to see them, go to our website, nhbr.org/exchange. Now, a little bit later, we will talk about those movies that were overlooked by the Academy, but that a lot of Americans just loved. I'm talking Star Wars, folks. Again, 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. What was your favorite movie of the year? exchange@nhpr.org. So since both of you mentioned Get Out, let's talk about that movie because it's getting a lot of attention, a first in many ways. Amy, just set it up for us, please.
Okay, so this movie, which was written and directed by Jordan Peele, who is nominated for a director and is, I believe, the fifth Black director ever nominated for a director's Oscar. And he's probably best known for Key and Peele, the sketch show he had on Comedy Central. So this movie stars Daniel Kaluuya and Allison Williams. She plays his girlfriend. He is going out to the country to meet her parents. They're played by Bradley Whitford and Catherine Keener. They don't know that he's African-American, so he's kind of nervous about that. And then once he gets out there, kind of the way... So what I think is fun about this movie is in horror movies that I love, there's always this thing where, am I being gaslighted or is something scary really happening? You know,
wait, what does gaslighted mean?
Is someone trying to trick me into thinking there's a ghost or that I'm being haunted or is there really a ghost? So here it's, you know, is what he's seeing, the discomfort he's feeling, is this all kind of racism and socioeconomic differences and the way Americans are about class and race? Or is something much crazier going on? And that's kind of the fun of this horror movie. And it's a horror movie. So you give away that kind of, yes, something is crazier is going on.
Well, here's a little clip from the movie. Now, in this scene, the main character is warned by another character that his girlfriend's white family does not have good intentions.
So look, I go do my research. Apparently, a whole bunch of brothers been missing in this suburb.
But it's cool.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man?
Couldn't see no brother around here.
Chris was just telling me how he felt much more comfortable with my being here.
Get out.
Sorry, man.
Get out!
Yikes. Okay, so Tom, what do you think? Sort of the racism that African Americans, especially Black men, sometimes feel just walking down the street in a white suburb. And director Jordan Peele creates it or presents it as a horror movie.
And that's one of the things that surprised me so much when I saw that Get Out was even being considered for a Best Picture, because they usually overlook what's the last one? Maybe The Exorcist back in the 70s? I can't remember, because I think the Academy doesn't take horror movies seriously. And in many respects, with art, you have to sneak in the story. And I think that's what Peele was able to do with that. Kahlua also, I just wanted to jump in because he's in, I don't know if you've seen Black Mirror, which is a BBC television show. It's kind of a dark Twilight Zone. And he's in one of my favorite ones of those. So I was really happy to see him not only get more notoriety just for being in a major motion picture, but for getting an Oscar nod is terrific.
Well, here's a clip from Fresh Air where Terry Gross talked with Jordan Peele. In this clip, he says, over the history of the horror movie genre in this country, most people's basic fears, you know, the dark, dogs, whatever people are afraid of, have shown up in a film, except for one, says Jordan Peele.
Every true horror, human horror, American horror, has a horror movie that deals with it and allows us to face that fear. And except race, in a modern sense, hadn't been touched. You know, it really hadn't been touched, in my opinion, since Night of the Living Dead 50 years ago. Maybe with the film Candyman. And that, to me, I just saw a void there.
Again, that's director Jordan Peele of Get Out talking on Fresh Air last year. The movie up for several nominations. What other movies, Amy, have leading Black characters or were directed by an African-American?
Well, none nominated this year. The other, I would say, I guess Mudbound it has a pretty solid African-American cast, and Mary J. Blige is the supporting actress from there. Denzel Washington has a nomination for Roman J. Israel. I didn't love that movie, but he did a really good job with that performance. It was kind of a performance in search of a movie, but a really solid performance from Denzel Washington.
And Octavia Spencer gets a supporting actress in The Shape of Water.
Yes, right. She's another one who I just love. I don't know that was such a great role for her, but I can totally forgive this idea that we'll just nominate her for whatever she's in.
Kind of like Meryl Streep, who we'll talk about later.
Exactly.
Other minority actors or directors that got mentions or nominations this year?
That's
Tom.
A good question. I still think as much as attention, and deservedly so, is being given to opening up not only the industry, quote unquote, but the Oscars to minorities and women. I still think if you take a look at it, I sound so negative today, but I kind of take a look at a lot of these and say, I hope this isn't just tokenism. I hope this isn't just, okay, for a few years, we're going to nominate this guy or nominate this woman, because I think that the trend needs to get there so it can be more widespread. We can get wider ranging topical films and appeal to a larger audience.
Well, and we talked at the beginning of the show about how, you know, sometimes you hear about these movies and you don't know where to see them. The movie you mentioned, Amy, Roman J. Israel Esquire, starring Denzel Washington, his ninth nomination. I'd never even heard of this movie until I started researching for the show. I just want to play folks a little clip of it. Roman J. Israel is this sort of civil rights oriented lawyer, kind of down and out. I don't want to give it away, but some stuff happens to him through the course of his career. Let's hear.
Mr. Ramirez was told he was not under arrest, and yet he was refused use of the bathroom. That's a violation of civil rights.
You can wait and address this at trial.
Oh, I would like to address it now. I'm just saying,
Mr. Israel,
if guards in this courtroom would not allow you to use the bathroom, you would, by all definition, be detained.
I'm going to hold you in contempt if you continue to pursue this.
You're asking me to obey an erroneous court decision, and you tell me to wait. In my experience, wait.
Okay, find you in contempt.
So he's trying to do the right thing, but then he kind of starts doing the wrong thing. Amy.
Well, he has sort of a crisis moment where he decides maybe this life of just doing good has not amounted to much. You know, here I am getting, I can't remember if he's kicked out of his apartment or he's having some difficulty in his apartment. And the man he works for dies. And it's like, what have I got to show for it? And so he kind of makes a wrong choice. This movie, I should say, not in theaters, but it will be available, I think, tomorrow for home viewing.
Okay, yes. So it's a real mixed picture this year, no pun intended, in terms of where you can go see these things. Sometimes you don't have to go anywhere. So we'll talk more after a short break. A lot more movies to go through, both those who won nominations and those that didn't. We'll also take your questions and comments. So send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Coming up, we'll talk about a bunch of others, including The Post, The Shape of Water, which won the most nominations. Also Lady Bird, which I saw this weekend. So we'll talk more in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, break out the popcorn. It's Oscar season. We're looking at this year's nominees, but also at other movies that were huge successes that were overlooked by the Academy. What movies did you love? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And definitely check out our website today, too, for more information about the Oscar-nominated movies and where to see them. My guest in the studio, Amy Diaz, editor and movie reviewer for The Hippo, Tom Cook, professor of film at Keene State College, and both of you, lots and lots of discussion about the intersection of politics and culture at the movies this year. We talked a little bit about racism. Judging from these movies, Tom, it seems like police brutality, fraught police relations with African Americans is another theme this year.
Well, sure, you can talk about, and we haven't even mentioned Detroit, which I believe was released this year. It wasn't last year's movie, was
Sometime
it?
Sometime in the late summer, I think. And I think kind of got, it was released and was forgotten kind of very quickly.
Right, but dealing with an incident that occurred in, with about police brutality in the town. And it focuses very closely. One of the nice things is it talks about obviously the much larger social issue, but it really is confined into a single house where some police are called for a disturbance and just what the brutality that at least one of them imposes on the occupants there, particularly of racial and minority descent. Was really a brutal and interesting film. These are kinds of the ones that it's hard to say you like them. Hey, let's go see Detroit.
Yeah.
But was very interesting film.
Sure. You're glad you saw it, even though it's tough to
Sit through. In a way to say it, I guess. Yeah.
And I think that was that John Boyega who was in
yes.
it? And a really solid performance. In case all you ever see of him is the new Star Wars movies, he's also, you know, kind of a serious actor, and he was in that movie, did a really solid
performance.
Yeah,
he was either a police officer or I think more like a security guard, who is called in, and he's kind of almost accused of it. He's really good.
At this moment of the, you know, Me Too movement and sort of women coming into their own, demanding more of a voice in film, lots of older women are featured in these big nomination categories this year. One writer joked this year could be Oscars so menopausal because there are so many women over 45, even over 50 in these movies. As a woman of a certain age myself, it's very nice to go to the movies and see people who kind of look like me. What about that, Amy?
Oh, it's delightful. I agree. If you look at the best actress and the supporting actress roles, you've got kind of a span of ages from Saoirse Ronan all the way, you know, kind of up. And she's in her young 20s. So, you know, you've got a nice.
She's the Lady Bird star,
she's
right?
in Lady Bird. She plays a teenager in that movie. So I think it's great. And I kind of feel like this is movies catching up to TV. I feel like for the last maybe 15, 20 years, we've seen more of these great performances and roles for women, and not just, you know, as moms or girlfriends or, you know, girls who are trying to pretend like they're still in their 20s, but for women of all ages. And I'm so delighted that that's going into movies as well.
Well, I think the mother in Lady Bird got a supporting actress nomination, right? Yeah.
And that's really, I think the core of that movie. So Lady Bird, written and directed by Greta Gerwig, is kind of a look at, I think it's the early aughts. It's her final year as a high school student. She's at an all-girls school in Sacramento. And that's Saoirse Ronan. And then Laurie Metcalf plays her mom. And that relationship, the mother-daughter relationship, so fraught, is kind of the core of that movie. And it catches it so perfectly.
Well, and as my teenager would say, it's kind of cringy at times.
Yes.
Because
oh yes,
often all this mom and teenage daughter do is bicker. Mothers of daughters can probably relate to a lot in this movie.
I recognize myself in both those women at this point.
Well, let's hear a little bit from this movie. Again, in this clip, Lady Bird and her mom are bickering, which they do a lot, about what Lady Bird's next step should be in terms of her education.
I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
I want to go where culture is, like
how
New York.
How in the world did I raise such a
Or at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire, where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College. And then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
Okay, and I want to let listeners know what happens in the end of that scene is Lady Bird gets tired of her mom picking on her, and she opens the door and drops out of the car on the highway. And, of course, the audience I was in tittered when Lady Bird says, I want to go to New Hampshire where writers live in the woods. That's great. What about this movie, Tom? What strikes you about the fact that this, you know, kind of sweet coming-of-age story, it's not an epic film like Out of Africa or Dunkirk,
right.
But it got some nominations.
Absolutely. Well, a quick silly story. My students cast for their advanced projects down in New York, and so I was down with them, and I went to see LBJ, and then came out and walked right across the street and saw Lady Bird, and I said, how strange that those would be put together, but they're very different films, obviously. I think Lady Bird is, both of you already addressed the fact that, and both of the actresses got nods. I think it appeals to multi-generations. I think the mothers who have daughters of that age see both themselves in the mother and daughter role. And then obviously you can go, I mean, my 16-year-old son, we wanted to come up and see that. So I think it's not just women that it's appealing to. I think we have a couple of movies. We're going to talk about one later on as my personal favorite, and I know you both like them. But Lady Bird, I think, is another of those that it's not just about women's issues, it's about life issues. And I think that's why it has such a broad appeal. And I'm hoping that, and obviously with all of this attention that it's getting, it's going to go wider and a lot more people are going to see what I think you refer to as one of these smaller movies.
Well, and to that point, here's an email from Garrett in Londonderry who asks a question that I often have. Garrett says, why does the Academy typically nominate for Best Picture artsy movies that most people don't go see? Mm-hmm. He says there seems to be a disconnect with the movie-going audience. You know, Amy, I've sometimes thought, why don't they come up with, you know, they can stick with their Best Picture category, mm-hmm. but come up with another, like, fun movie that everybody loved.
Best picture you actually want to see.
Exactly. Best picture that more than, you know, 500 people saw.
You know, and I think, I mean, I would, based on what gets nominated, proximity is clearly part of it, right? These movies that are released at the very end of the year that people who are voting on Oscars and other awards saw, you know, a couple weeks ago versus in the middle of the summer seem to be the movies they remember. And that's sort of how they're released. These Oscar movies seem to always get bunched up, you know, in December and released then. And clearly that is part of what helps push a movie to the front of people's mind. And, you know, I think that if actors are not, you know, nominating actors, then they're going for the important actor performance versus, say, you know, one of the people that was talked about kind of earlier in the year, Tiffany Haddish, who was in Girls Trip. I mean, it's a comedy, so already it has a hard time breaking through. But, you know, those roles that are great, but maybe don't look as effortful, don't look, you know, you're not putting on a fake nose and doing an accent and being a historical person. those movies seem to get, you know, those performances get nominated, those movies get nominated. And so it's, I think the other movies, I mean, that's what makes Get Out such a miracle, right? It broke through, like you said, the horror movie that got nominated,
right.
Or even Lady Bird, which has kind of got some comedy in it, you know, and was able to break through and get nominated. That's what makes those movies kind of so unique.
Okay, so Wonder Woman. Can
yes.
we just
Hooray,
talk about that?
Yes. I mean, for the rest of the hour, okay,
you know,
that'd be great.
I mean, it was beautiful. The woman who played Wonder Woman was beautiful. All those Amazon goddesses were beautiful. The scenery was beautiful. The story was compelling. I mean, why not Wonder Woman, Tom?
I think
Garrett's point, you know, a lot of people saw that movie. A lot of people loved it.
Sure. I think Hollywood takes itself a little bit too seriously. It's a double-edged sword in that you want your film to be really popular and make a lot of money. But if it does too well, they're going to kind of snub you. And so relative to why, to his question, our emailer's question, relative to why the more popular films don't necessarily get nominated, I think, is it an insecurity in the Academy? I think it probably is, that for so many years, we've been, as movie makers, have been maybe kind of like the shy half-brother of theater. And so everybody wants to be taken very seriously. And so that's why I see a lot of the haute culture, you know, really important movies being nominated, as opposed to the Academy being able to take itself not quite so seriously and nominate a Pink Panther or something like that. Not Steve Martin's, though.
So they should have two categories. They should have, right?
Absolutely.
They should have high culture movies that most people won't see but are really good, and sort of regular movies that everybody loves that were also really good.
Well, I think you see that.
That's like, my suggestion, and Hollywood's listening to me, right?
With like the People's Choice Awards or something
right.
like that. I mean, I think you see very different kinds of films with that.
Go ahead, Amy.
Well, you know, I think that was kind of the purpose of expanding the category. They hoped that more of those movies would slip in to the Best Picture, at least. And I was really hoping, I kind of thought that it was, far-fetched, but I was really hoping that Wonder Woman would make it in. Logan, which is kind of a superhero movie. So Logan is the end of the X-Men series. Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, Patrick Stewart as Professor X. That is an adapted screenplay. Oscar nominated Logan. I think that maybe some of these movies can start to sort of filter through. You know, Wonder Woman was a great comic book movie. Sure, it had action and explosions, but it was great. And she did a really great job. And Patty Jenkins, the director, I think she could have totally been in the directing nominees because she did a great job with that movie. If you want to know how great a job she did, look at the other Warner Brother DC comic movies, Justice League and Batman v. Superman.
I hate to say this, but I mean, I don't hate to say this, I guess, but one of the things I liked so much about, and Gal Gadot is gorgeous, and as a man, I love looking at her, but one of the things I loved most about Wonder Woman was you didn't have the voyeuristic looking down her dress or anything like that.
Oh, that was so great.
But then take a look at Justice League. And you get that.
The difference was so stark when you saw those two movies and you really saw, well, this is what happens when you've got, to be honest, a female director building a female character, not just kind of showing off, you know, how she looks.
Right.
And it made the character so much, just so much richer in Wonder Woman.
Here's an email. Thank you, by the way, Garrett, for that one. Here's an email from Carolyn in Ware. She says, I love movies. Always try to see the major nominees before the awards show. Glad to have seen Get Out online. Not a fan of the horror genre, but its statement on racism is so compelling. Carolyn says, very disappointed that Wonder Woman got nothing. She says, I found Three Billboards very moving, but was entranced and transported by Shape of Water. Complex, tender, beyond imaginative. And she says, by the way, can't wait to see Lady Bird and I, Tonya. I'm looking forward to seeing I, Tonya also because I remember that whole episode. But let's talk about The Shape of Water if we could. I think, Tom, that won more nominations than any other
13,
film.
13, I believe.
Yeah.
And what a surprise. Amy and I were talking beforehand about how The Shape of Water had been hyped and I was seeing trailers like starting in October. Wow, that looks really interesting. Oh, Del Toro sounds great. And it wasn't until like 2 weeks ago that it came someplace to New Hampshire. So that addresses the issue of finding it. But now it's gotten in wide release, I think rightfully nominated for all sorts of things. What a strange topic to be talking. It's basically a love story with a creature from the Black Lagoon. And I thought everybody in it was wonderful. Part of my, I was a little disappointed. I'm one of the biggest Blade Runner fans around. I think it's one of the 10 greatest movies ever made. It's one of my personal favorites. But so now, as beautiful and as the art direction and the cinematography was in Blade Runner, I got to give it to The Shape of Water. Because what a mesmerizing film it was.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
And got one of the greatest, silliest dance sequences I can imagine. I was laughing out loud during that movie.
And we won't give
it
away.
Right, don't want to give it away.
Because folks can still see it.
Yeah.
Before the Oscars, but I loved it too. It was kind of an interesting mashup between legend and fantasy and sort of a Cold War thriller and really, really interesting. This isn't giving too much away. It's about a mute cleaning woman who has a love affair with this strange fish man. And I want to play a little bit from the movie and then Amy, definitely get your take on it too. So we're going to hear first in this clip from the movie's leading bad guy, who basically works for the Pentagon and sees this creature as a strategic advantage against the Soviets. And then from a scientist who has a complicated background, I won't give it away, who's deeply fascinated by the creature and really respects it.
You may think That thing looks human. Stands on two legs, right? But we're created in the Lord's image. You don't think that's what the Lord looks like, do you?
This creature is intelligent, capable of language, of understanding emotions.
So, Amy, I have to tell you, a couple of my friends saw it and they said, that was a weird movie, but I loved it. What'd you think?
You know, I really liked it. I agree. It was beautiful. So Guillermo del Toro, who's, I kind of think of him, I first saw Pan's Labyrinth was, I think, the first movie of his I've seen. So he's a real, like, creature guy. He builds these very visually interesting creatures. And this fish man, I don't know what else to call him either, is a very visually interesting creature. The whole movie has, to me, this, like, visual underwater theme. So because it brings in that sort of Cold War era film noir look, everything, even stuff that happens on dry land, is kind of a little bit dark and shadowy, and everything has an underwater look to me. Sally Hawkins plays the woman who falls in love with the fish man. She's nominated, as is Richard Jenkins, who plays her neighbor and Octavia Spencer. And then Michael Shannon, I think, was the sort of the villain there. And
he's a great villain, by the way.
He's
so
really
villainous.
Good at that. Yes. And the professor was Michael Stuhlbarg, I think is how you say his name. And he's also in another Oscar-nominated film. So a good year for him, even though he didn't get nominated. But yeah, I thought it was very, very pretty. It was just so beautiful to watch, kind of a adult storybook was kind of how I thought of it. You know, a grown-up storybook because of the way all of these scenes are shot.
That's a really good way to put it. An adult storybook.
It just that fairy tale, but kind of a mix of the monster movie and very pretty.
Well, thank you for the email, Carolyn. Again, you can email us as well. What movies have you seen over the past year that you loved, whether they got an Oscar or not, an Oscar nomination or not? Send us an email like Carolyn and Garrett did, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So a couple years ago, a movie about journalists, hooray, got an Oscar. And this year, Tom, there's another journalism movie that's
there is indeed.
Got some nominations. Go ahead.
Yeah, The Post was one. I guess Steven Spielberg needs to bring a movie out every other month or something like that because I was bowled over at the end of the movie when I saw that Spielberg directed it. But again, telling the story about the Pentagon Papers. And obviously, and strangely enough, the movie itself obviously makes allusions to All the President's Men and the Watergate break-in. But for me, while I really enjoyed the performances, and I learned a lot about the history. I mean, we lived through that era, but I didn't know a lot about of the specifics. And actually about how truly involved and close the White House came, and strange how topical it might be right now, to shutting down the press and telling the Washington Post, you cannot print this.
Well, and they told the New York Times they couldn't do it and succeeded, so the papers switched over to the Post.
Right. And so Meryl Streep plays the woman who has inherited the Washington Post from her husband and family. And the big problem is, obviously, the board of directors doesn't want this woman running the paper, and she has to make the decision. How much is she going to fight for that?
Well, let's hear a little bit from that exact scene that you mentioned. Here's Post editor Ben Bradley, played by Tom Hanks, talking with publisher Katharine Graham, played by Meryl Streep.
So, can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Oh, dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're going to like the real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
So much in those two words, Amy. Not yet.
Yes. And, you know, I was just thinking kind of Murderer's Row, right? Steven Spielberg directing Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. For me, that movie really comes down to Meryl Streep's performance and playing Katharine Graham and playing a woman who grew up a certain way and now has had to change her perception of what she can do and be more confident. So a really solid, I mean, no surprise, it's Meryl Streep, solid performance from her.
Well, it's interesting, and I want to refer listeners to a show that we did about 3 or 4 weeks ago on the Pentagon Papers, just reminding people what this really was all about. I listened to some audio of Katharine Graham to prepare for that show. And then I listened to some audio of Meryl Streep playing Katharine Graham and really almost couldn't tell the difference. Yeah. So that speaks to what you say, Amy. Coming up, a couple more Oscar-nominated films, two of them about World War II that have gotten a lot of attention. And we'll talk about movies that were great but didn't get so much from the Academy. And then we'll take a peek down the road at 2018. All that's coming up, so let's hear from you as well. Stay with us. This is The Exchange.
Hi, my name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR's Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, a fresh look at New Hampshire's longstanding debate over passenger rail. What do you think? Is it time for commuter rail? Or is it still not worth the money, given our population and demographics? Send us an email before the show at exchange@nhpr.org. Let us know what you think about this topic, and then join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're going to the movies since it's Oscar season. For more information about how you can see some of these movies, go to our website. We have information there about theaters and streaming options. You can join us now as well. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Amy Diaz, Tom Cook, I definitely want to talk about those other movies that got a lot of attention, a lot of love, but didn't necessarily get an Oscar. But before we do, two other Oscars that caught my eye, including one that I saw, had to do with World War II, Amy. And I thought, okay, well, that's great. You know, it's a wonderful topic to make movies about. But why World War II this year? Because 2018 is the end of marks the centennial of the end of World War I. I expect to see a lot of World War I movies this year, not World War II.
Well, you know, I almost wonder if the thing that makes it present or interesting is the way they both end. So both of these movies, Dunkirk and Darkest Hour. Darkest Hour stars Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. Dunkirk is written and directed by Christopher Nolan and kind of looks at the evacuation of Dunkirk from the beach, from the air and the water, and intercuts three different time periods. And Darkest Hour is kind of all back in London. And what are the politicians doing? And both of them end, spoiler alert, it's history. both of them end with the same Winston Churchill speech that kind of rouses people. You know, here Britain is in this really dark period of time, kind of preparing for what they think might be a German invasion. But they're going to he's rousing people to never surrender. You know, we're going to fight them on the beaches. And this is the speech that ends with that great line about, you know, we're going to hold on. Our empire will hold on until the new world comes to the defense of the old. Great writing. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And so I think maybe that rousing kind of, you know, pulling through hard times is maybe what makes both of those movies, you know, interesting to people.
Well, since you mentioned it, and I did not see Dunkirk, but I did see The Darkest Hour. So I did not know that that Winston Churchill speech, no, we're not going to negotiate with the Nazis, even though some of my top advisors want me to. We're going to take the fight to them, even though we're kind of the last country standing, really, because America hadn't gotten in at that point. So let's play a little bit of that. This is from The Darkest Hour. Winston Churchill, played by Mr. Oldman here, delivering his big speech before Parliament, just rejecting this idea, finally, that we're not going to negotiate with the Nazis. Let's hear.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. For without victory, there can be no survivor.
Okay, so that's a clip from The Darkest Hour. I'm a history buff. I love this movie. At this moment in the theater, I'm choking up, basically. What do you think, Tom, about the that both of these World War II movies about a very similar period are up for Oscars this year?
See, I'm not a history buff, so I'm seeing all of these movies come out this year. They're teaching me things about, not that I grew up during World War II, but we were talking about The Post and how it is giving us information about that. That's just my personal comment on history. Why certain things come out, I'm not sure, because obviously, as you know, development of a major motion picture, I mean, it's years and years and years in the making to you have to get the script and write that and pre-plan it. So I think it, in my opinion, to address your specific comment, I think it might just be an unusual, fortunate quirk that we get these two really wonderful films at the same time.
You know, and having seen Darkest Hour and having heard so much about Dunkirk, I kind of want to see Dunkirk now, Amy, but it's not around.
That one is available by streaming. And I will say that usually by the end, right before the Oscar ceremony in the last like couple of weeks, some of the theaters around here, the AMCs in particular, will screen all 9 of the movies.
So
if you
want to,
you know, buckle up, get a big bottle, a big thing of popcorn, you can go see maybe usually it's like 4 and then 5, you know, in a day. So you can go see all of them if you want to.
No, I could not sit.
You can go see 5 in a day.
That long, as fun as that would be. Well, our listeners are really jumping in on this topic, and that's great. And again, you can join us with an email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. A couple folks have said what David in Amherst says. So, David, I'm going to read this one. He says, please give a plug for small independent theaters like Wilton Town Halls, which is showing both Lady Bird and The Shape of Water tonight. David says, recently Darkest Hour and The Post were excellent. So a couple people wanted us to give a shout out to Wilton's Town Hall. So there's Wilton's Town Hall. And we've talked about The Colonial in Keene, Red River in Concord. The Music Hall in Portsmouth, Amy, we can't forget them. They show these movies, too.
Absolutely. And you know, those places that you just mentioned, also the Hopkins Center in Hanover, will be screening the Oscar shorts. So if you want to, you know, really fill out your Oscar ballot for your Oscar pool, you could go see it. Usually in February, they'll have blocks of shorts. So the documentary, the live action, and the animated shorts. So you can, that's a place where you can go see those movies. Again, you know, different kinds of movies. Hey, I love superhero movies, but it's good to see other movies as well.
Well, speaking of the animated category, and that's the category that my kids are most interested in watching along with superhero movies, which never get nominated, but we've already had that discussion. Got an email from John. One word. Coco. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, strangely enough, I shot the director's advanced project, so I know Lee Unkrich really well. And this was a particular personal project of his. He's obviously lived out in California for ages, and he felt it important to, for his family history, to show the Hispanic heritage that particularly has hit the West Coast. And so Coco does that. It's about a young boy who dreams of being a famous guitar player and finds the guitar. And it's about hopes and dreams and how you can tie together generations of families, about those who have passed and those who are present. So Coco, I think, has become a real personal favorite for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's about the Day of the Dead, the Mexican holiday, the Day of the Dead, and how you connect with ancestors long past and how he connects with them. So there's a bunch of stuff going on here. I'm guessing you liked Coco, Amy.
I did. I didn't love it, I'll be honest. But I really, whenever it turned its attention visually to that kind of Day of the Dead stuff, it was so beautiful and so just sort of standout visuals that really grabbed you and pulled you in. And I wish the movie had done more of that. It kind of, I feel, turns away at some points to kind of go on this, a little bit of a buddy road trip, this boy and a character he meets in the Land of the Dead. So, you know, but I did like the visuals. Also, this song, one of the songs, Remember Me, is nominated for Best Original Song.
Right.
And I think the last time I saw one of those prediction websites, I think it's the favorite to win.
Well, and speaking of others in this category, I was just looking this morning, Tom, at the other nominees. And I just found out a couple hours ago that there's one, Loving Vincent, that is, yes, it's animated, but it's animated along the lines of making Vincent Van Gogh's pictures come to life. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I think, again, unique ideas. The Academy loves that, too. And so I think the opportunity for this one, for Loving Vincent in particular, to bring not only, you know, an interesting film, but once again, you're teaching some people about art that normally, not to get down on the American public, but, you know, how, what's our intellectual status. Let's bring a little bit of art history into some things. I think that's a great one to pursue.
Amy?
And I haven't seen that one yet, but it is available for home viewing. I think it's available for streaming. I think I saw it on one of the on-demand services. So that's one that, you know, we can all go check out now if we want to.
Well, and a couple more emails from our listeners. Diane from Hollis. I was disappointed that Tiffany Haddish from Girls Trip wasn't nominated. I was hoping more comedic films would stand a chance after Melissa McCarthy won the award in Bridesmaids. Thank you, Diane, for that. And then Patty says, I saw Hostiles this past weekend, the tragic Western starring Christian Bale and Rosamund Pike. It was excellent. Acting was exceptional. Cinematography was beautiful. Themes and relationships were complex. Left you thinking about it for days after. Christian Bale left your heart heavy, and Rosamund Pike was compelling. I haven't even heard of this movie, Tom.
I didn't until
Amy?
Last week.
No,
either.
Okay.
And it is technically, I think, a 2017 release and no attention. No attention anywhere for it.
Right. I'm not sure if it was available, if it was released in like a major venue in
I
time for the Oscars.
I think at a festival somewhere. Yeah,
A longer film, but a Western, kind of bringing back the Western. It's being compared to the best Western since Unforgiven. I'll agree with the writer that Bale has some wonderful moments. There's very little dialogue. It's minimalistic in dialogue, and it's about Christian Bale, who is this soldier who is charged with escorting a Cherokee chieftain and his family across the nation.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Right,
yeah.
And it's that the chieftain has scalped and killed so many of Bale's compatriots and friends, and so it's about these two clashes of two people who, you know, historically really hate each other and how they're supposed to come to grips with that. And Rosamund Pike plays a woman whose entire family is killed right at the very beginning. And so about how these three learn to work with each other.
Let's turn the corner and talk about movies for this year, including ones that are just out or ones that are coming out soon that are getting a lot of attention. And Amy, there's a couple here that are sort of, in fact, the three that I want to talk to you about are all sort of remakes, but remakes of books or earlier movies. Let's talk about Jumanji. Now, just remind us, this was filmed partly in Keene, so we should talk about that one first.
Well, so this is, I guess it's sort of in the same universe as that original Jumanji, kind of a sequel maybe, or a reboot. I think it's called Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. So the way it's set up, these four teenagers start playing a Jumanji video game, get sucked into the game, and become their avatars.
Just like Robin Williams.
Who become Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan. And I think everyone did a fantastic job. Now, I will say, I went into this with zero expectations. but I kind of feel like this is that movie. You always need a movie that everyone from like age 11, 12 to great grandma can go see together. Everyone has a basically good time. I feel like this is that movie. It was solidly done. Nice bit of adventure. Kind of funny. So for me, it really worked.
Let's hear a little bit from the reboot of Jumanji, if we can call it that. Here we go.
Where's my hair?
Where's the rest of me?
Oh, my God. We're in different people's bodies.
Bethany, don't look at it.
No!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man. Wait a second. Where's my phone?
Don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry.
Okay, so a teenager's nightmare turning into a middle-aged, overweight man. So that's Jumanji. Now, a remake, but of a book, A Wrinkle in Time, is also coming out pretty soon. Lots of listeners have probably read this classic sci-fi fantasy book from the early 60s, but just kind of remind us what this is all about, Tom.
You got me, because while I read it ages ago, I usually live my life
a week in advance. Yeah.
I know what's coming out next Friday, and that might be about it, so I did a little bit of research. But yeah, a lot of talk about that. I don't quite remember, and I know I read it, but that's one of those that is a real sci-fi classic. Maybe you can remind me.
Well, to help you out, we've got a little clip from the movie, and it kind of presents what this movie is all about, the basic plot anyway.
Who are you?
We are in search of warriors.
Your father has done an extraordinary thing,
but he may be in danger.
Your father's alive.
We believe he is, and the only one who can find him is you.
That's from A Wrinkle in Time. Okay, Amy, there's the quest. Your father's in danger. He's still alive. The only one who can find him is you. And I think Oprah Winfrey
says President Oprah Winfrey in that one.
Oh, interesting.
And in the trailer, it's also Mindy Kaling, Reese Witherspoon, I think I saw, Zach Galifianakis. I think the father that they're talking about is Chris Pine, I think, was the father in that. Okay. So the visuals look amazing. I've seen, I think, two versions of that trailer in the theater. And because I guess there's a lot of sort of playing with parts of the universe and the galaxy. I read it when I was a kid, and I can't quite, I know there was science-y galaxy stuff in it, but the visuals look really amazing. So I'm looking forward to that, and I think that's coming out in early March.
Well, and that may be another one, like you said, Amy, that spans generations because it's contemporary, just came out, has all those elements to it. But a lot of people read that book, you know, when they
Absolutely.
Were teenagers and probably are curious to see what it looks like
on
screen.
I think this is one of those ones where the parents maybe drag the kids. Because they want to see this movie they remember.
Another one that has gotten a lot of attention, I think you guys talked about it the last time we got together, is Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
A science fiction movie based on Ernest Cline's best-selling novel of the same name. Do you want to talk about that
yes.
a little bit, Tom?
Oh, fell in love with that. I obviously grew up playing video games, and this is about, this is obviously set in the future, another Spielberg film. This is about a kid who doesn't have parents. He lives a kind of a scavenger life, but kind of with his aunt, and in just a decrepit area of a post-apocalyptic Earth. And the way people escape and live is through virtual reality. And so he was able to put together enough and find this virtual reality headset, and he lives his entire life in that. One of the things that the creator of the virtual reality has left an Easter egg, and if people don't know what Easter eggs are, in video games they're little hidden gems that you can, little surprise tricks that you can find. And this Easter egg, if you can find it, will give the person who finds it the rights to all of Ready Player One's assets, billions and billions of dollars. And so it's all about this quest for all of these different corporations, this kid and his friends trying to find that. And it's got, at least the book was filled and filled and filled with loads of very fun video game references from the 70s and 80s.
Oh,
so if you're a big
okay.
fan of that, if you're a big fan of adventure, I think Ready Player One is probably going to be, well, I can't say the big one for the summer because we've got a lot of other superhero ones,
yeah.
but a real good one.
Well, let's hear a little bit from that as well. Ready Player One.
The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg. The first person to find the egg will inherit $500 billion and total control of the Oasis itself.
All right, so that's from Ready Player One. And hard to believe, guys, so many more movies you could have talked about. We have to close it out here. But Amy, real quick, is there any other film that you love that we haven't talked about this hour?
Well, you know, some superhero films that I really enjoyed, the Spider-Man Homecoming from last year, also War for the Planet of the Apes. And we spoke a little bit about Logan. So, you know, some of those big summer blockbusters that are, I think, legitimately good movies worth checking out.
And I haven't seen the Star Wars movie yet.
Oh,
plan
yeah,
to
definitely
do it. We
worth.
Haven't talked about that
definitely
yet
worth
as
seeing.
Well. Yeah, that's worth it for Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker alone. Go ahead, right. Tom. Other movies that we haven't talked about.
Well, I'll chuck my brain at the door and say that I really fell in love with a very silly kind of horror movie called Happy Death Day.
Oh, that was great.
It was really clever, and that's what I'm looking for. This is about this girl, this young woman, who is killed in her sleep and wakes up, and she keeps reliving that, and she's supposed to try to find out who's going to kill her. And I thought it was, the two lead actors were terrific and very
Yikes.
Silly, clever fun.
I don't know if that sounds like fun in my book, but that's okay. You can have your fun,
right.
too. Tom and Avery, it's really great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.